Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former all-pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for 4 episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Audio.
For those in recovery, support from friends and family often leads to better outcomes. Here's to those who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. Visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose for information about treatment options and how to support those experiencing addiction.
And welcome to the Drive Tape Inkley. Again, Rob Brenton producing Carrington back on Monday. It's game day, baby. It's game day for the Kansas City Chiefs. Last preseason game, but it is a Chiefs game tonight. You can hear it right here. 96.5, the Fan pregame starting as soon as we're off at 6 o'clock before Mitch Holtis, Dana Hughes, and one Josh Klingler get you going. But first, Rob, maybe some pizza for tonight.
Time on the Drive, Bing. Dial me up right now. Caller number 6-5-8-6-9. I gotta get this new number figured out, buddy. It's 586. I'm gonna memorize it. 586-7965.
Boom!
I had the old one written down. 586-7965. Caller number 6 wins a pizza from our friends over at Pizza Tasio. Pizza Tasio is Kansas City's best New York style pizza, and they have taken over the town. They got locations in Waldo, Belton, North KC for you, Bink.
That's right.
OP for me in Midtown. They also have a killer selection of crafts and local beers, plus unique wines. So whether it's a whole pie, perfect for a preseason game, or just a slice or two, be sure to visit now at pizzatasio.com. That's Pizza TASCIO.com.
And what a good night for it, right? I've always told you my favorite combination is pizza and beer. I mean, when you have that combination, it just goes so smooth. Because if you're going to watch preseason game number 3, Rob, I liken it to what they said about owning a boat. 2 great days in your life. You buy that boat, and then, of course, the day you sell that boat. I look at preseason football the same way. I can't wait for preseason football to start. And then I can't wait for preseason football to end. However, there is redeeming qualities of tonight's game. You fired up, Rob. You get your Chiefs stuff. You got your red Friday. Not Friday. It's Thursday. But you're ready.
I mean, I got the gear on. I'm ready to roll.
Well,
I understand.
Both had to have it on.
Still game day. It's game day for Carson Wentz.
Yeah. Carson Steele. Right? Alligator Man. Nico Remigio,
Clyde Edwards-Helaire,
Kadarius Toney, Irv Smith.
Big day for Irv Smith.
Yeah, huge. Curtis Jacobs on defense. Going to be fun there. But now the last preseason games tonight, and probably some people heading out to Arrowhead Stadium here in just a little bit. Of course, you can hear the game, as always, and all throughout the year on 96.5. The Fan, you can hear the pregame starting at 6 o'clock. Shortened pregame during the preseason. And then it'll be back to its normal 3 hours during the regular season with Art Haynes. And you can hear Art Haynes tonight, as a matter of fact, on that show. But the bottom line is, it is the final preseason game. Cuts are made the 27th. I think the Chiefs got it good from the NFL schedulers on this, that they can get this thing over, because other teams got to wait through the weekend. And maybe the Chiefs, you say, well, maybe they need the time. Maybe they need the time to figure out the 6th and 7th wide receiver. Again, the decisions aren't going to matter for starters, but some of your depth does matter. And there's games on Saturday. There's even games on Sunday. The cuts have to be done by 3 o'clock Central Time on Tuesday. You'll start seeing the cuts, in my opinion, trickle out on Friday, on Saturday, when they have a tough decision to make. Could be Sunday that it comes out. But if it's a veteran player, they'll give them the chance to go catch on with another team, unless they want to stash said player on their practice squad, which changes everything, because now you can put guys on your practice squad that had an NFL experience. But the wide receiver room, and speaking of wide receivers, we'll talk to Dean and Hughes at 4 o'clock today. Color analyst for the Kansas City Chiefs, and of course, former Iowa Hawkeye in Kansas City Chiefs wide receiver. And that's kind of the big thing to me. That's the big story tonight. Do you want to see the running backs? Sure. Why not? Running backs, wide receivers, but wide receivers, by far and away, the most important thing to me that I want to see. Because it is the extension of one Patrick Mahomes, and I've always felt that, and I felt this way for a long time. I kind of feel this way heading into this draft. Of course, we talk a lot of draft on character concerns. Last year, our number one priority was wide receiver. Honestly, I think that now for next year too, because Hollywood Brown's going to be a one-and-done deal. So looking for that next year with the Chiefs, going wide receiver once again. Because my theory is, if you have Patrick Mahomes, you will never have a better quarterback than him, ever. And I don't think that's a stretch to say. Now, if you do have one better than him, but go for it. If you think a quarterback's going to come in here and go to six straight AFC title games and win three Super Bowls and go to four? No, it's not going to happen. I guess it could. I doubt it. So you're never going to have a quarterback this good. Supply him with talent. Give him the weapons he needs. Let him flourish. Well, he's going to flourish anyway. And I know he can win a Super Bowl with that group of receivers last year that led the NFL in drops. But imagine making his life easy. Just imagine how dangerous this team would be offensively if he had the weapons behind him. So we'll see that tonight, and you'll see the kickoff rule. And looking forward to hearing what Dannon Hughes has to say about this. Former guy that played a lot of special teams with the Chiefs. Looking forward to that. But the kickoff rule is interesting. We talked about it a little bit yesterday, and I've heard people talking about it nationally. As far because now, if you kick through the end zone, they put the ball at the 30. Where if you land in the, quote, landing zone, they're going to put the 30, but typically kickoff will get you to 26, 27. The shortest, the minimum last year, the lowest in the NFL was over 16 yards are returned. That was the fewest yards returned from kickoffs last year. So it's very possible every time you kick off, if someone gets a landing zone, they're going to get it to a 30 or even farther. Just kick it to the end zone. But they're thinking about, the NFL's thinking about changing it to 35, and a lot of people think, hey, if we really want to make these kickoffs something and get the more returns, because the NFL does want to see more kickoff returns, you put it to 35. I personally don't have a problem with putting it to 35, but I do now. I don't like changing the rules of the game during the game. And I know it's preseason and not the regular season, but it's still the game. To me, the game started when training camp started and then the preseason. When the NFL set loose and the teams first arrive at training camp, no more. You got to do it this year. It's a one-year deal anyway, because you don't change the rules in the middle of the game. Because these teams and Dave Toe, they've been practicing this. Some teams have said, you know what, we're just going to kick it to the end zone, let them take it at the 30. But now if you change things, go to 35, that changes something different. The teams didn't practice through in training camp. They didn't worry about it in preseason. But I think it's something to watch. And the NFL do whatever the hell they want. But, Rob, I've never been a fan of changing the rules in the middle of the game. Now, I have no problem with the 35, but I have a problem with doing it now.
I mean, why? No real games have been played. Like,
but preseason has.
Yeah, but training camp has. It doesn't count. The Chiefs are 0-0 today. They've lost both preseason games. They're 0-0. It doesn't matter. They've been practicing this rule. It's a tweak. It's not an outright rule change. It's a tweak to an existing rule. This seems more like an emphasis moment. I have no problem with them improving rules in the preseason. I'm with you. The minute cutdown day happens, the minute we're in full go, it's September, whatever. Hey, it's football. The game's the game. But it's August 22nd. If you want to tweak the rules, tweak the rules.
Well, I have no problem. Again, I have no problem with the 35. I just have a problem with the timing. If this is something you wanted, you should have done it. Because guess what? In preseason, you practice this. And then a lot of teams just get to the point of like, hey, we're just going to kick it to the end zone. We'll give it to the 30. That's their strategy. That's what they prepared for through training camp. That's what they prepared for through preseason. That's what they're ready to go do. And then all of a sudden you say, well, we're going to put the 35. That changes the complexion. That changes the job of what the special teams coordinator does. Again, I don't mind it being in 35. I just don't like changing it now. And I consider the preseason extension of the regular season, because this is when they practice the rules. This is when the new rules go into effect. That's when they get it. That's when they referees come to training camp and put the new rules and get it right. And you saw the uncertainty when Mecole Hardman got that safety. You saw the uncertainty on the rule. I know a lot of kickoff returns weren't there, but the NFL's never been more popular. It's like you're changing something that's already the most popular. Why do you need to change rules in the NFL? And also, I think it's silly that you can't onside kick until the fourth quarter if you have a deficit, but you got to announce it to the other team. That's part of football, man. Teams coming out at halftime and kicking a onside kick, that was strategy. That was strategy by seeing something on film that they thought they could see because the other team is always back in this kickoff return and they're running backwards. To me, that's a strategy of the game. That is part of the game of football. And they took that away and changed it. And it didn't need to be changed because, again, the NFL is the most popular sport in the world.
I mean, that's not true, by the way. It's not the most popular sport in the world. In America, it's
in the United States. Let me correct myself there because I'm slighting soccer there, and I don't mean to do that, Rob, because I know you're Mr. Soccer, and you're right. You're right. But in the United States, you have to agree. The most popular sport. Oh, wait, didn't the EPL start? Didn't it start last weekend? Yeah. Who's your team again?
Chelsea.
They can play any regular season games over here ever?
I doubt it. They play their preseason games over here, but I doubt they come over here for regular season.
Because the NFL keeps expanding over there. It's only fair. But in the United States, football is the most popular. Getting more popular than that. So what they've been doing has been perfect for the NFL. And you don't change things right in the middle of the action. Coming up next, we'll look at what's more important. Practice games or exhibition games like tonight? Or what they actually see in the actual practice. Plus, the defense, something different this year. It's finally got swagger going into a regular season next.
The Drive with Carrington Harrison on your home for Kansas City sports. 96.5, The Fan, brought to you by DM Injury Law. Have you or a loved one been in a car wreck? Contact DM Injury Law today and get the money you deserve.
In life and recovery, every day is a little different. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former All-Pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for 4 episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Audio.
Welcome back to The Drive. Game day. Jay Binkley, Rob Brenton, Carrington back on Monday. Our phone number, remember, it's changed. We'll take calls later in the show. We'll talk Chiefs with anybody going out to Arrowhead Stadium or just Chiefs fans in general. Have a question for you kind of up around 4:30 or so. Mark DeRosa, MLB Network, will be in Kansas City. He's actually calling a game. MLB Central is going to be calling a game. The Phillies and Royals. Tomorrow night. Won't get it in the Kansas City area. Be blacked out in this area, but other areas will get it. But Mark DeRosa was head coach of Team USA and at silver medal they got in the last World Baseball Classic. Bobby Witt Jr. was on that team. So we'll talk to Mark DeRosa about Bobby Witt Jr. and the American League Central and who he thinks is going to win. And we'll talk some MVP talk as well with Mark DeRosa. So we'll talk plenty of Royals today, too. Mark DeRosa coming up at around 2:35 or so. But, Rob, I mentioned practice, which is better, live reps, because there's been a lot of talk about the NFL and preseason and scaling it back, which I think they'll eventually do. They've taken one game away now, and I do believe they'll take two games away. If you play in the Hall of Fame game, you play 4 preseason games instead of 3. It used to be 5, which is completely ridiculous how many games you had to play. But this is an evaluation game. Teams are not going to be playing their starters. Most teams around the league won't be playing them. The Chiefs won't be playing Mahomes. The Bears won't be playing Caleb Williams. It'll be the backups trying to vie for spots, but they're still redeeming value in guys trying to make, you know, the end of the roster. It's enjoyable still. It's still football to watch. But the good news is the Chiefs get out of the way tonight, and the cuts don't have to be made until August 27th. But what's more important? Like, to me, if you want to see these guys go, like Carson Steele, you want to see him run, Denerick Prince and stuff. Tonight, it'll be against the Bears' backups. which to me, more importantly, is playing against the Chiefs defense, being on that scout offense and playing against the Chiefs defense, because they won't find a better defense to play against than the one they see every day in practice rather than what goes on in a preseason game number three against backups. Because you always have to be careful. Someone's out there starring and makes great catches. You know, they're catching the ball on safeties or corners that are going to be selling insurance for State Farm next year and not be in the National Football League or playing in the UFL. That's what's going to happen. But if you do it in practice against a real defense, like last year, the Chiefs defense was real. Number two in the NFL in yards against, number two in the NFL in sacks, number two in the NFL in points against. I felt with the physicality of this defense, you know, Mike Pennell added to that towards the end of the year and through the postseason. This defense will hit you. And playing the Chiefs is much different than it used to be. This defense, I felt going into last season, we had Patrick Mahomes' best defense ever. I thought top 10. I sold them short. Sold them short going into the season how good they were actually going to be. They came close to a team record 60 sacks. 57 is what they had. They had 55 the year before. 60 is the team record back in 1990. But they still finished number two in the NFL in sacks. They just manufactured ways to get sacks, either from the outside, the inside, corner blitzes, safety blitzes. Steve Spagnuolo mixed it up for the Kansas City Chiefs. But this year, there's high expectations on this defense. The swagger is there for the defense. For a team that was always considered offensive laden, and of course they are, because Patrick Mahomes is here, Andy Reid's here, best head coach in the NFL, best quarterback in the NFL, obviously you're going to think offense. And let's be honest, the offense did beat the number one, three, and four scoring defenses in the postseason last year. They came together at the right time. But with the drop passes and everything else, the offense wasn't the same that you've seen from the Chiefs leading the NFL in points per drive like they've typically done one or two with Patrick Mahomes. But the defense had their swagger. And I thought they were kind of slighted last year. I don't think people really started talking about them towards the end. In the postseason, they started talking about them. This defense was good. I remember being good early on. You thought, okay, can it carry on? Can this defense still be good in the latter parts of the season? And it was. Like, it never subsided at all. I feel, honestly, this should be a top five defense all the way around. I don't know how you feel about this defense, Rom, but I think the expectations are there. I know Snead's gone. They're going to plug and play and replace that. I don't think it's that big of a deal for the Chiefs. I think this is a top five defense. And again, Patrick Mahomes finally has a defense. That's what the rest of the NFL is worrying about, because now he's got an offense to go with the defense, which is remarkable.
I feel this way, but I'm curious your opinion. Why aren't you worried about the loss of Snead? Because, and we've talked a lot about this, me and Carrington, I just feel like that position is plug and play under Brett Veach.
Same here.
I feel like they have countless examples of a guy just showing up and being good. Like, do you remember Rashad Fenton? There was no background or lineage of him being a good player. He was a great player for the a great extreme. He was a good player for the Chiefs. They moved on. They didn't miss a beat. There are lots of examples at a corner, but
much Charvarius Ward. It was traded for Parker Anger.
Exactly.
It was nothing for nothing. He was an undrafted guy. Boom, he's played for the Chiefs.
But you could argue that L'Jarius Sneed was one of the top five corners in the NFL last year, and one of the major reasons why that defense ended up top 10 and ended up the reason why the Chiefs won the Super Bowl is because of L'Jarius Sneed. We've all seen the video, the highlight of him just absolutely wrecking Tyreek Hill, the line of scrimmage. He made a touchdown-saving play in the game against the Ravens, like in the AFC title game. Like, if Zay Flowers scores there, who knows what happens? He's gone. I don't think they're going to miss a beat, but you think they can improve without L'Jarius Sneed? Like, what's, because they made no major improvements to the roster. If anything, their defense talent-wise would have taken a step back, right?
It's a big loss, no question about it, but is it going to be the same Sneed going forward? That's the question. Are you still going to get that production from Sneed that you had last year? Because we know the NFL, life hits you fast. And it was a guy that they had to, it's one of the few guys I've ever seen, Rom. Remember, if you don't practice on Friday, you're not playing? That was kind of one of the few guys I've ever seen that would not practice Friday and ended up playing on game day. He didn't practice at all during training camp last year because there was always an injury. Now, he was a guy that shut down number one wide receivers. I think Trent McDuffie clearly helped out on that. It was a kind of a tandem between the two. And then he shut him down. And then you got guys like Joshua Williams, Jalen Watson selected in the seventh round, who ended up having, well, you remember Jalen Watson a couple years ago, that big 99-yard touchdown against the Chargers saved the game. But I like the secondary, and Steve Spagnuolo, I mean, he's a former defensive backs coach. That's what he does. It's plug and play. And with Snead, who knows the answer? And I understand why the Chiefs didn't pay the big money. They had other fish to fry. You had to pay Chris Jones, you're going to have to pay if you want to keep Creed Humphrey, Trey Smith. There's other guys, Nick Bolton. There's other guys and decisions they're going to have to make with their money. And Snead's been practicing some with the Titans and some not, which I'm not putting a lot of stock into because he's a game day ready player. But again, I think the Chiefs know what they want and who they want. They had a decision to make, Chris Jones or L'Jarius Sneed. I think they see the value in Chris Jones going forward. But with the secondary is ridiculous. Because last year, remember, they had to bring in Mark Edwards and stuff for safeties. But when you got Justin Reed out there, you drafted Jaden Hicks, the top safety, in my opinion, in the draft last year. Dane Brugler, I think, had him as number 39 overall player and his number one safety. You throw him in this equation, you're getting Brian Cook back. The Chiefs love safety play, and they love putting the safeties out there. Shamari Connor, who was my favorite draft pick 2 years ago, can play safety, can play nickel corner, can do a whole bunch of different things. But for years, and even like Mahomes' first year, remember when he scored 40 points twice, 50 points once, and they still lost? Well, that's not going to happen anymore. The Chiefs, the only team in the NFL not to give over 24 points last year. It was ridiculous. And if they can be, last year, they were second in the NFL in points against per game. And if they can be anywhere close to that, now all of a sudden, you're talking about Patrick Mahomes not having to do too much. You're talking about Patrick Mahomes, hey, let's just go out and score 20 points a game or 22 points a game. And that's good enough to win games, but they won't. You know, last year, the offense, when you saw it, they're going to hit over 30 points a game. It was down. Last year, they averaged 21.8 points a game, kind of in the middle of the pack of the National Football League. They weren't lighting up the scoreboard, but you didn't have to when your defense is giving up 17.3 points a game. So if they can, I don't expect that this year with this defense. I wouldn't say put it against it. But even if they gave up 18.3 points a game, now you're just asking Mahomes to get even two touchdowns and two field goals to win a game on average, if that's what you're asking, which, of course, he'll get much more than that.
I also think what's noteworthy here, and I'm arguing devil's advocate because I am a big believer in this defense as well. There's no reason not to be. But are you at all concerned about the pass rush? Because last year, Charles Omenihu was very good for this team. Now, he missed the first six games last year because of his suspension. But we don't know how long he's going to miss this year. He tore his ACL in, what, the divisional round? Like, or right before the playoffs? So it could be a prolonged absence. We don't know the timeline on Omenihu. Felix is a little bit of a wild card. The Chiefs operated this offseason like he is going to be back and take a step forward because, again, they made no real massive moves, upgrades at the position. But without Omenihu for an undisclosed amount of time, is it possible the defense regresses just a hair and doesn't take the progression you think? Because Felix last year at times, Felix Anidike Uzomah, for those who don't know who I'm referring to, looked lost. If he doesn't take a step forward, is there any concern about that from you? Because the pass rush then looks like Chris Jones, George Karloftis, blitz it up, where last year you had more options before you even had to get into your blitz bag.
You know, many of you played 11 games and ended up with 7 sacks, but I look at the top 2 sack leaders for the Chiefs last year. 10.5 for Chris Jones. I could see him getting that or eclipsing that this year. George Karloftis had 10.5. George Karloftis' trajectory is going up. I think George Karloftis can be a 15-sack-a-year guy. 14, 15, because there's some he kind of leaves on the table. So you look at that production. Mike Dana had 6.5. There's a reason why the Chiefs brought him back. I could see Mike Dana getting up around the 8 category, somewhere like that. Trent McDuffie, believe it or not, he didn't have the picks, but he had 3 sacks last year. I think Shamari Connor is going to be in that question. Leo Chenault had 3 sacks last year, and he was a very good pass rusher at Wisconsin, even though he, you know, played a lot of the middle linebacker. They're going to manufacture it. They'll blitz from inside linebacker. Drew Tranquil, believe it or not, had 4.5 sacks last year, you know, from the inside linebacker position. They're going to blitz him, but Spags finds a way to manufacture the blitz. And 2 years ago, that was the big concern, the big worry going forward is he didn't have anybody. Then all of a sudden they ended up with 55 sacks, number 2 in the NFL. And then last year they even upped that to 57, basically the same cast and characters from last year. And really you're bringing everybody back that was part of your sack equation last year. I mean, you think about a L'Jarius Sneed that's been good in the past. They had no sacks last year. You know, it's Trent McDuffie. Trent McDuffie's an outstanding blitzer, but nobody blitzes as many times from the secondary as what the Kansas City Chiefs do. But no, I'm not worried about the pass rush. I'm very confident in this defense. I think easily top 5, and that might be selling them short. They should be top 3. This defense has become very, very – that's where they've spent their draft capital. They spent a lot of it on defense. And I understand Sky Moore and Rasheed Rice coming in. Finally, he spent a first-round pick on Xavier Worthy on offense, who I love. I can't wait to watch him this year. But the bottom line is, I think they're going to find a way to manufacture the pass rush, Rob. I think, honestly, it's what they do, and they'll figure out a way to supplant until Omenihu comes back. And again, he got 7 sacks last year in 11 games. How many games is he going to play this year? 9? 8? What do you think, 8 or 9 for Omenihu?
I can't even begin to know. There's been no update to my knowledge. I think somewhere between 6 to 10, see what I did there? Former station letters. I think that's kind of the window for what you expect. I mean, I know he's rehabbing, and I would imagine he starts the year on PUP. Maybe he starts the year on that 8-week PUP, but that's kind of my guess, is he plays around half to a quarter of the season, somewhere in that window.
I think Mike Dana's coming along, man. I do. His production, and they found some in Leo as well. Because Leo's always been good. As a matter of fact, he had a higher, because college football focus, pro football focus, but it's college football. He actually had a higher pass rushing grade than T.J. Watt at Wisconsin. I mean, that's, again, it's not his specialty, but he showed clearly last year he was good in that pass rush game as well. Shifting gears to the Kansas City Royals, Mark DeRosa from MLB Network, former Major League player, 16 years, joins us next because he'll be here this weekend calling the Royals and Phillies.
The Drive with Carrington Harrison on your new home for Chiefs football. 96.5, The Fan, brought to you by DM Injury Law. Have you or a loved one been in a car wreck? Contact DM Injury Law today and get the money you deserve. Car wreck? Remember, Mike's got this.
Welcome back to The Drive here on 96.5, The Fan FM. You can hear the Chiefs right here tonight. Pre-game beginning at 6, Dan and Mitch, Josh Klingler, 7 o'clock for the third preseason game for the Kansas City Chiefs. Jay Binkley, Rob Britton here with you. But joining us now, Mark DeRosa, 16-year MLB veteran. Mark co-hosts MLB Network's morning show MLB Central with Robert Flores and Lauren Chahadi. The trio will be here in Kansas City this Saturday for the national telecast of the Royals and Phillies game on MLB Network. Again, this telecast will not be available in Kansas City, but for fans outside of Kansas City, because they're going to black it out here. But Mark DeRosa, you excited to come here to our town?
Yeah, it's gonna be super interesting. I'm making them nervous because I actually haven't called too many games myself, but the ones I have called, I did one with Tom McCarthy from Philly, and then I've done the others with Bob Costas. So I keep saying Robert's got a lot to live up to.
Mark, you've done it all between that, managing, playing, hosting on that. You've done a lot of everything. But one thing you did do is you had Bobby Witt Jr. on Team USA, and you think about how good, and you've had some really nice things to say about him on MLB Network. We've enjoyed it. But what was it like having him on the team, and did you see this kind of potential for Bobby in the future, and how important was that, him being around all those stars?
Yeah, I think that was the biggest thing, right? When Bobby was added to the roster, I think it was – to get him around all the stars and kind of immerse him in that locker room and let him see how the Mike Trouts go about it and the Nolan Arenados and the Mookie Bettses of the world and see how they perfect their craft. And I think that was big for Kansas City and Bobby and his family for him to be a part and see that. I walked away I think Aaron Judge is the best hitter in the sport. I mean, certainly people can argue the Juan Sotos of the world, but I think the totality of tools and putting them to use on a baseball field, I think it's Bobby's game right now. So my only regret, and it wasn't a regret at the time, because at the time Bobby was a young player being brought in and kind of that was the role that was assigned. Come in, immerse yourself with these guys. If we can get you some ABs, we're going to get you some ABs. But, man, watching it and walking away from it now, I should have moved him over to second base. Trey Turner was swinging the bat. And then I just didn't want to put Bobby in a tough position and move positions and be a young player kind of around those guys. So, yeah, I think come 2026, you're going to see a different edition of Bobby Witt in the WBC.
Well, it probably helped him being around all those players. I know Patrick Mahomes talks about, you know, the fact that he got to be around those major league players with his dad and how much it kind of soaked in with him And obviously, we look at Patrick Mahomes and Bobby Witt Jr. a lot of the same same ways. But you're calling the game with the Royals and the Phillies. This Royals team, you know, you think about Salvador Perez. You know, he was on that 15 championship team, and he's still here. He's been with the ups and the downs. Now the re-ups with this team. But this team, Mark, has the first three guys in MLB with over 70 RBI, first three guys with 80 RBI, and now almost the first team with 90 RBI. Bobby Witt Jr. and Vinny's already over that, but then Sal Perez is at 85. But the run differential in this team, you liken it back to the old Royals in 14 and 15. They had that bullpen, but this offense for the Royals is pretty potent as they have 71 wins right now.
I agree with you. My heart is with the Royals for a lot of reasons. Number one, just being around Bobby. Matt Quatraro is just a great guy every time I've come in contact with him. But I just like how they went about their offseason. In a game where it kind of you feel like the middleman is getting squeezed out on a roster with superstars and guys making the minimum, Kansas City valued going out and attacking free agency. JJ went out and brought in like really good veteran ball players, spent some money, surrounded his youngsters with the right guys. The Lugos have stepped up and been just unbelievable. Waka, even a Hunter Renfro, those type of players kind of immersed amongst the young guys, I think can only help. So my goal is more teams attack the offseason and their roster from a spending standpoint, more like what Kansas City did. And so that's why I push for them. Secondly, yeah, the guys like Sal Perez, I mean, what he's been able to do, he's carving out a potential Hall of Fame case. And I don't think the world truly knows the run producer that is Vinny Pasquantino. So I think, tomorrow before we head out to Kansas City, I'm going to try on the show tomorrow morning to do a nice skybox on Vinny and kind of break down his season so far, because I mean he's sitting north of 90 RBIs right now.
Yeah, it's amazing. He's third in Major League Baseball, and you think, I mean, the stolen bases, they're gonna have three guys over 30 stolen bases this year. You think about the run production, the home runs have been up, but with these moves JJ Piccolo's done, I mean, you mentioned the Lugo, but the Cole Reagans trade last year for Chapman.
Yeah.
I mean, he's come in at the top of the rotation for the Royals, and you think about the trade deadline deals. You know, Paul DeJong brings in that, experience, 14 postseason games in St. Louis, and he's been good in Kansas City. And then Lucas Ersig, who really kind of became the closer, that guy's been unbelievable for the Royals. Just good trade deadline moves.
Yeah, he's been huge. Yeah, they've done an amazing job. I think what JJ did was perfect. He honored their first half, right? He went out and honored the guys in the clubhouse to push forward and try and truly make a run at this. And they are a scary out if they get in because of the starters. Postseason's a game of trying to keep the opposition from not putting the ball in play so you can't make mistakes. And you got three guys that spearhead the rotation that can certainly punch tickets with the best of them. So you add in the Ersig on the back end of your bullpen, get a couple timely hits, and I think the Royals are a scary out.
You know, it's interesting just how good this AL Central is. I mean, Cleveland, yeah, just a 2.5 game lead over Minnesota and the Royals. They have a 3.5 game lead, do the Royals and the Twins over the Red Sox in the wild card. But, it's very possible the AL Central has three playoff teams.
You know, it's funny. We had a thing today on the show. Do we kind of totally trust the Guardians? I think at this point you got to, right? Like they played north of 120 games. Stephen Vogt has come in and done an amazing job, and just kind of sitting down with him, he said to me that the biggest help making his transition easier is the fact that his best player is his hardest worker in Jose Ramirez. So it's kind of, he said, they just follow him. And they follow suit, and he goes, and then I have a nasty bullpen. So I think the Guardians certainly have staying power. Now, could they go cold and someone jumps them for the division? Certainly. But, yeah, three teams from that division, I don't necessarily see that happening, but you never know.
Well, it's interesting. The Royals get their crack at Cleveland several more times before the end of the year, and they have a winning record against them this year. Mark DeRosa is going to be MLB Central's doing the game. That's going to be a lot of fun. Not available in the Kansas City area, but for fans outside listening in a different area, you can get that. Mark's been kind enough to join us back in 14 and 15 when the Royals were in the World Series. One final question for you, Mark. Bobby Witt Jr. finishes where AL MVP?
Yeah, I'm going to say two.
Two, okay.
Judge is hitting homers like guys are getting singles. Pretty unbelievable.
Juan Soto, man, this guy, what, eight straight hits were home runs? I mean, it's insane.
I know. And it's nightly basis. I mean, God, to see those two guys go at it, it's pretty awesome stuff. But Bobby is certainly taking the world by storm. I did the top five faces of baseball, and I took a lot of heat. I had Bobby in the top five. I think the world, especially, I have a son who's 14 years old. And when we left Team USA, he was talking about two guys. He was talking about Nolan Arenado and Bobby Witt Jr. So those are the guys he's following.
Yeah, the all-around player, and you'll be here in Kansas City. It'll be a fun game to watch. Royals and Phillies, that will be fun as the Royals just sit, what, three games behind Philadelphia right now as far as their record, 74 for them and 71 for the Royals. So it's going to be a great game. Mark, I hope you have fun in Kansas City. I think it's going to be fun that you guys are doing that broadcast.
No, I appreciate it. We're going to have a blast.
There you go, Mark DeRosa right there, former 16-year Major League player, and of course, one of the hosts on MLB Central and Team USA's coach in the last World Baseball Classic that saw Bobby Witt Jr. That was actually a lot of fun watching that. I loved watching that. I love that team. Do you agree with that, Rob? Because Mahomes kind of the same way, because he was always around superstars, you know, with his dad as a kid and seeing them, but... You know, I mean, not saying it would have changed. Bobby Witt Jr. was still going to be a great player, but he got to absorb because that roster was loaded, absolutely loaded with stars. So you're working out in the clubhouse with a ton of superstars.
I mean, I liked the World Baseball Classic. I mean, I feel like I wasn't like all locked in because it takes place during March Madness, so it kind of fell out of sight, out of mind at times. But it probably did do Bobby good to understand, like, you know,
with Trout and all those guys.
And there was an element of like, all right, what do those guys do? And now he's, I don't want to say, you know, replicating it, but he's mirroring a lot of that here, because you talk to anyone in that Royals clubhouse and he is the leader, and he's what, 24, 23, 22, somewhere in that, right? He's a very young man. So it clearly had an impact on his ability, not just on the field, but off the field.
Yeah, being around all those guys that, you know, won MVPs in Major League Baseball, and you're soaking all that in. And that was really before his career kind of took off that he's done it. Now, clearly, he's never been as good as he is now. I mean, he's barely even getting to his peak. I mean, who knows how good he's going to be. Finishing second, the MVP, I'd give it to him. But I understand where Judge is coming in, because Judge is doing everything. Although I do think Bobby Witt Jr. would have a whole lot more home runs if he was playing in New York. And Juan Soto, like I said, is with Aaron Judge there, and they're crushing it. He had eight straight hits, which is really weird. And, well, not straight hits. They weren't straight, but his previous eight hits were all home runs before he finally ended that streak. But that was absolute insanity. But the Royals and Phillies, I think it's a great series. I think it's a fun series. Put yourself up against one of Major League Baseball's best. I know the Dodgers have two more wins than the Phillies. I still think the Phillies the best all-around team in baseball. But Philadelphia for three, you can throw Waka, Singer, Lugo at them. Boom, boom, boom. And then Cole Reagans to start off the first game against Cleveland, because on Monday, I mean, it's taking it easier. So you got the Phillies for three, and then you got at Cleveland for four, including a doubleheader, a very, very important doubleheader, which is good news that Cole Reagans pitching the first game of that, 12:10 p.m. on Monday, then 5:40 p.m. for the second game. So four against Cleveland. Then they're down to Houston for four, and they've been red hot lately. I know they lost last couple, but they went on a roll there, as they've done most of the year. And then Cleveland again for three at home, then three against Minnesota before heading out to New York for the New York Yankees. Vern calls this the riptide, the 20-game stretch that'll help define what the Royals are. I mean, clearly, Royals are 4-2 against Cleveland this year. 4-2. And Cleveland does not look as good as what they've looked like early on this season. I wouldn't put the Royals past catching Cleveland, to be honest with you. And for some reason, Minnesota's just hanging around. I've always thought the Royals were better than Minnesota. Clearly, when they played each other, that wasn't the case. But you look at the run differential, it's much different. By the way, the Guardians are losing 5-0 to the Yankees. That game's in the bottom of the eighth. So it looks like Royals aren't playing today, but Cleveland is going to go ahead and take that L, it appears, at that point, which is really important for the Kansas City Royals. Not even playing, and boom, there's Cleveland. Now you're sitting there looking at two games back, Rob. Two games back going against, of course, a very good team in Philadelphia.
I mean, you could argue the best team in the NL in Philadelphia.
I think they are. I know the Dodgers have more wins, but I think Philly's better.
I mean, Philly's really good. I have that game on in the studio in here, the Cleveland Guardians-Yankees game. The Yankees have guys on first and third, one out in the bottom of the eighth, so it might end up getting bigger than 5-0. Like, we talked about this on the show yesterday. As much as the Royals and being successful and, you know, winning games is of the utmost importance, and winning last night against the old man Johnny Cueto was important. Good job, you won. But as much as anything else, what happens around you is just as important. Like, you potentially gaining a half game today on Cleveland because they are losing right now to the Yankees, that is a positive step. Keep an eye tomorrow on the Red Sox as they continue to potentially fall out of the race. The Twins, keep an eye on those games. Like,
and they're not a good home team either, the Red Sox.
It's okay to lose games or the Royals. I understand. We talked about yesterday, living and dying. It's okay to lose games, but keep your eye on what happens around you. So the Guardians are probably feeling a little double thud today because they're on the brink of losing the Yankees, and they lost ground to the Royals because the Royals won yesterday. That's the dream scenario for Kansas City.
And Cleveland, if they lose today, which it looks like they're going to, have lost 5 of 6 games. They were swept over the weekend, last weekend, at Milwaukee. They're going to lose 2 of 3 to the Yankees. Their one win had to come in the 12th inning against the Yankees on Tuesday night. Then they got Texas for 3, then Kansas City, and then Pittsburgh, and then Kansas City again. By the way, the White Sox still for 3 games with Cleveland. You say, But the bottom line is they played them 10 times this year, and they've actually split. It's been 5-5 with Cleveland and Chicago playing each other. They haven't exactly destroyed Chicago like everybody else has been doing. Jeff Passan tweeted this out earlier. The best trade line performance this year, Kansas City. 100% agree. Since July 30th, he said Lucas Ercig, 0 ERA, 10 and a third innings pitched, only given up 4 hits in those 10 innings, 14 Ks, no walks. Paul DeJong hitting .286, 3 home runs, been playing great at third base, not his natural position. Michael Lorenzen, 1.99 ERA over 22 and two-thirds innings. I mean, that has been insane what the Royals have done at the trade deadline. And Lucas Ercig, man, that's your new closer. He got the closer treatment last night. He got the flickering, what do they call those lights? Not the HD lights. What do they call those things?
The LEDs?
LED lights. Because they can do that now because they used to take forever for those things to warm up. They can flash them or whatever. So he got that treatment. And then, you know, his name on the board like your closer when you walk out. He liked it too, by the way. And he probably would have been the closer in Oakland if not for an all-star at that position. But Lucas Ercig has been completely incredible for the Royals. So is Paul DeJong. Brings that experience as well. I'm looking forward to this. And it is not like the Royals aren't right there with some of the best teams. There was things today where people were saying there is no teams in Major League Baseball on pace for 100 wins. Be the first time since 2014. Because the Yankees, 74 wins. Baltimore, 74 wins. There's the Royals with 71. Just 3 games behind the best record in the American League. Best record in the National League, Dodgers with 76, 74 with Philadelphia. Get a crack at them this weekend at home. And the Milwaukee Brewers sitting there with 73 wins. But the Royals, 40-26 at home. Very, very good home baseball team. They're built around their park. Mention the Red Sox. Red Sox aren't having quite the success at home. Matter of fact, they've been, they're 29-32, 3 games under 500 in Fenway, 38-27 on the road. Really weird because they're good on the road, but not at home. That 3 games under 500. Hopefully that keeps up for Boston because Boston's the only team that I can see that could catch the AL Central teams because I still have 3 AL Central teams making the playoffs.
I mean, the Rays have basically fallen out of the race. They're, 6.5-7 back with 30 to go. That is a large hill to climb.
And the Mariners are, I think, you're done too.
I saw a breaking news. I think the Mariners just fired their manager too. I think I saw that come across a few minutes ago. Like,
They're 7.5 back now.
They're not catching the Astros either. Like it seems like the playoffs, the way they are set today, teams wise, is exactly how it's going to end up. It's just a matter of who's where, like seeding wise. It feels like in the next week we'll know. All right, Boston's fallen out, Tampa's fallen out, Seattle's all fallen out. It's here are the teams. It's a matter of where they're going to end up within the playoffs.
Yeah, it's crazy because the AL Central actually one of the better divisions in baseball. And Minnesota and Kansas City dead tied. They're both 71-56. So the positioning there, maybe the Royals or the Twins can take over the Guardians. They'll be 2 games back. That's it. Cleveland, again, has lost 5 of 6 games. They're not playing their best baseball at this point. Could they be caught? 100% they could be caught. Still got to play 7 games against the Royals, including a doubleheader. But I think you're right. I think the playoff teams are set. Boston's 3.5 back. Tampa's 6.5 back for a wild card. And Seattle's 7.5 and going backwards. Then there's Detroit sitting there 9. Again, I always say, well, if not the Royals, who's going to beat them? I mean, who's going to step up and be that team? Are the Red Sox going to be that team? Well, they're three games under 500 at home. They haven't been playing exactly consistent baseball either. But the AL Central teams I like. And if I'm in Cleveland, I'm worried right now. I'm worried about how this team's playing. I would have been more concerned when Bieber wasn't going to play at the beginning of the year, remember? But yet they've been able to withstand that and be a good baseball team. And everybody's talking about Stephen Vogt being manager of the year. How about Matty Q, man? Matty Q definitely deserves to be considered. A guy lost 100 games last year, 106 games. He definitely deserves to be manager of the year, in my opinion. Stephen Vogt's done a nice job. I get that. But Matty Q, why can't he be manager of the year? Tell me he hadn't deserved it. I mean, this team has power. They've got speed. They've got the pitching. They do everything. Why not? He's done a hell of a job with the Kansas City Royals. No question about that. Coming up next, though, some ESPN, they did a story where they ranked NFL coaching staffs. Where did they put the Kansas City Chiefs next?
In life and recovery, every day is a little different. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former All-Pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for 4 episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Audio.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Knorr sides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr taste combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.